Welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name's Peter Howard, at Pierre Howdy on Twitter and Threads and everywhere else you might need an at. This week, we're going to be talking about whether Mike Neighbors should actually be considered the wide receiver one in the 2024 draft class, mainly because that's the best framing device I came up with to talk about a table I use to break down wide receiver classes in terms of who they are versus who has come before them, in terms of the type of roles they were playing in college by someone in Discord. But should Malik Nabbers be the wide receiver one just works as a better framing device? So let's get into it.
Do you have the time to listen to me grind? Take down the few watchers and nerds all at once. I am one of those skeptical of status quo. Lazy and to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I grind my Excel sheets. Sometimes pour cold water on heat. When the math's not adding up, you said I'm checking out. I'm just piling. Welcome to the ground.
So this episode's come supported by a frankly, posts in Discord, but if anyone wants me to, I'll put them out on Patreon in a free post as well, just so you can see the tables and what I'm looking at. And if that isn't good enough because you don't want to go on my Patreon page, stop trying to give me free stuff in a place where you can also pay a dollar to get everything. That's fine. Hit me up on any of the places I've gotten at, and I'll post it there too. Or, you know, my free database, you can make this table. And if you don't know how to make the table, then check out my YouTube channel because I teach you how to use filter with conditions in like a 7-minute video. So you can make it for yourself or just like believe what I say, I guess, if all of that is too much effort. So not to brag, but I've made a lot of different tables in my time, from hit rate tables to breakout tables to career year progression tables to just R squared tables, looking at what correlates to what most strongly over time in terms of fantasy football. The one I'm most likely to pull up these days isn't my breakout age table, which is still in the database, or it can be made from the database if you don't like my version of it, in terms of who breaks out the most often, depending on their breakout age, at a 20% threshold or a 30% threshold per draft round, mainly because that still falls into sample size problems. So what I typically refer to most in my process these days is breaking down, since 2015, when we really have data from PFF for it, who was playing the most in the slot and who was playing at a higher or lower A dot. Now my A dot and slot buckets tend to change, both in terms of what the player's A dot tended to be, but also in terms of what is most common coming from college. And it's still a work in progress, but typically if a player has an A dot for their career length over 13, that's a pretty high A dot based on most players that are drafted into the NFL. And below 13, I consider a low A dot. It's a fairly simple over-underline just based on where the majority of players tend to come in. Now, if you're working on a high A dot, I find if you have a slot rate above 20%, that's a lot of slot usage, again, compared to most players going into the NFL with that kind of an A-dot. And if you have an A-dot under 13, I think below 50% in the slot is a fairly low slot rate, and over that is a fairly high slot rate. So you've got these four different conditions where you've got high A-dot players with a low and a high slot rate with two different thresholds, and high A-dot players with a low and a high slot rate, again, based on two different thresholds, based on what's most common for that particular type of depth that you're working in the offense. Now, that is, again, just buckets, and buckets are flawed, especially when you consider that team and scheme are going to adjust A-dot relatively differently, despite the fact that we're applying this common filter to all offenses and all coaches' schemes and all plans that the offense may go through. We're also looking at career numbers. So we know where the holes are going to be in this process. It's going to be players who, for some reason, only played for a limited number of games, a limited number of years, or for some reason, their slot rate or A-dot are bifurcated in some way, or even multifurcated, if you like, based on their role changing consistently over time. However, we have enough examples at this point, about 120 players drafted from round 3 since 2015, round 3 or above, or below, depending on how you want to say it. Round 1 to 3 in the NFL, we've got 120 players. That's not a great sample, but it's an okay sample to start thinking that a lot of the variance is going to be smoothed over by the number of players we have. For example, when you're looking at Jalen Waddle with a high slot rate and a low A-dot, he didn't play a full complement of games, but enough players are entering the bucket, like Jaylen Waddle, that he's probably similar to at least a few of those that are getting those kind of conditions to be put in one of these four categories. Now again, an actual good process, and one I try to articulate and actually go through, is to run through a player's career year over year to really get a sense of how their production was relative to other players that have gone on to do well at the NFL. And even then, at best, we're going to be capturing like 70% of the good players. Some players are just going to be outlandish. Something that's been rolling around in my head a lot lately when thinking about goals or training models or training data towards successful prospects is the best player for fantasy, at least, in many ways in terms of the NFL, in terms of success, is Antonio Brown. We tend to target things towards the Julio Joneses or Calvin Johnsons of the world. That's for a number of different reasons. One, Antonio Brown didn't have a lot of data from college, and the data we had wasn't particularly standout compared to most other players. He did okay at a relatively low conference for a relatively mediocre amount of time. And so many players are going to cross the Antonio Brown thresholds, even with kick returning and punt returning or whatever the special teams you want to roll in, that it's never really going to help you limit the barrel you're fishing in to mean that you're getting a high rate of actual fish caught, if that makes sense, if I can cross metaphors for a second. But the actual results of Antonio Brown, the number of years, the peak in that number of years inside the top 5, let alone the top 12, is probably the best fantasy result, and it's a smaller player coming from a lower conference with less college experience or less college statistics to really profile before we have slot, before we have ADOT data to really work with from college, before we really have targets to work with from college. But the number of years he was consistently in the top 3, if not the top 2, that's the best outcome. And we mostly, for a variety of different reasons, don't want to think about that. One, he kind of gone off the deep end a little bit here in his later postseason career. But also, he's a smaller player, so the big BMI, tall, weight-adjusted guys don't really want to recognize Antonio Brown as the goal rather than Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. And from someone like my perspective, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Demaryius Thomas, while they fit that mold of the high alpha with lots of height and lots of weight and lots of speed-adjusted athleticism, even though I don't really value that, their college career also has a lot of data and they were highly productive every year relative to most prospects entering the NFL from where they were drafted from. And so they fit my ideal as what we can train a model or a bucket or a process towards as well. So it's always worth keeping in mind that the best hit we have ever seen for fantasy, really from the NFL relative to how much investment they got, is the guy that we can't really include in most of those processes we try to develop to have more hits. And I think that's really interesting when we think about the different buckets and the weaknesses in them. Having said that, that's just an aside that's been really weighing on my head a lot lately, weighing on my mind. I guess head works. A lot lately. These buckets are the simple way of just breaking down the types of roles players were playing over a career and how successful they were in the NFL. Now, I broke this down a little bit more last episode in that 26% of players enter the NFL had a low slot rate, high ADOT, and they hit at about a 40% rate if drafted in the first 3 rounds for all of those conditions. Now, we don't have a lot of examples of players with a high ADOT and a high slot rate. Since 2015, we really have 5 players that have hit at some level. And I'm using hit relatively loosely here. Just a single top 36 finish. Basically anyone who had any fantasy relevance in whatever form. So DJ Chark and Zay Flowers and Deontay Johnson and Darnell Mooney and Puka Nacua all weigh as hits, even though there's vastly different outcomes there. And you can tell from my last podcast and recently, I've adjusted it down from 30% to 20% to include more in that bucket. That's 12% of players drafted in the first 3 rounds actually fit that high ADOT and higher slot rate if I adjust it from 30 down to 20%. And looking at the overall numbers, that does a better job of bucketing it for this particular reason. Again, out of 120 players, only 15 fit this bucket, and 5 of them had some level of NFL success for fantasy. So it gives us some more confidence that even though they are relatively rarely drafted into the NFL in the first 3 rounds, when they do, even if we expand the definition to include 15 players instead of just like 5 in the previous sample, they're still hitting at a relatively high rate. Again, 15 examples isn't enough. I'd prefer a 0 on the end of all of these numbers, but 32 players were drafted in the high A dot and low slot bucket. So it's about half the sample, but it at least is going some way to getting towards a somewhat of a double-digit sample at least, to show that players that are drafted more recently at least, since 2015, with a high slot rate and that high A dot, are still having success and an above average rate, but it's still a fairly risky category to go in on. To talk about slot rate, by the way, just as another aside, put this aside while you're making the notes, because I assume everyone's making notes while they listen to this podcast. Slot rate is something that's increasingly been part of the most successful fantasy and also NFL receivers for a long time. Remember, one of the reasons Antonio Brown doesn't fit the whole alpha idea is that he played through the middle of the field, much like Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, more than someone like Julio Jones or Calvin Johnson. Slot rate isn't something new, but has become increasingly featured in the wide receiver one or the alpha fantasy receiver increasingly over time. So in other words, it doesn't seem to be wearing out. Defenses aren't adjusting to it so much that we can expect slot rate to stop being lower for most successful fantasy hits from a draft class. If anything, it's speeding up and becoming more intensified. So it's not a surprise to me that even in the high A dot category, we're starting to see more success, since 2015 at least, and guessing that it was lower before that, from high slot players, even if they're running a relatively high A dot for their college career. Looking at the smaller A dot or the lower A dot group, 43 players are drafted into the NFL with an A dot below 13 and a slot rate below 50, so a low slot rate. 35% of all players drafted into the NFL fit that category, and 48% of them in that category actually have some level of fantasy success. And again, that's a wide variety of success, with Corey Davis and Alan Lazard, all the way up to Rashee Rice, or rather, all the way up to CeeDee Lamb, Devontae Smith, Garrett Wilson. Those players are all in the same bucket. But they do hit at a higher rate than the high A dot, low slot group, which is what I'm often talking about when I say that the high A dot group is a really high upside, but relatively less successful more often. So when Zach Reed or someone else says that Marvin Harrison Jr. in this class should hit and should be the best wide receiver in this class, and they have him ranked one, but they would be less surprised if he didn't succeed than someone like Malik Nabers, I think that's what they're referring to. Even the good players from the high A dot low slot group have a slightly lower chance of success in the NFL. Whereas lower A dot players and lower slots, or below 50% slot, still hit a relatively higher rate. And that's true when you look at the lower A dot, below 13, and high slot group. Only 24% of players drafted in the NFL in the first three rounds fit that category of having a slot rate for their career total over 50, and an A dot below 13, again for their career total. So, much like with the high A dot group, this is a lower category. Only 24%, only 29 examples drafted since 2015. But they hit at 44%. That's greater than the high A dot and low slot group that we were talking about with the likes of Jamar Chase and Chris Olave or DK Metcalf or Marcus Brown. So either way you slice it, players that have a lower A dot actually hit relatively more consistently in the NFL once drafted in the first three rounds. And when you split both samples, on the high A dot group, we don't have a lot of examples to look at the high slot rate, but increasingly it seems to be an important feature of hits in the NFL, and they're hitting at an above average rate when they are drafted in the first three rounds. But the safer group is the low slot high A dot group. And when you're looking at below 13 A dots, or smaller A dots, lower A dots, more players are drafted with lower slot rates and they hit more consistently. But when players are drafted with high slot rates, they are hitting much more often than you'd expect, considering 24% are drafted in the first three rounds, but 44%, relatively the same hit rate, are hitting from that particular group. And that's the Drake London, Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown group. Now again, all these players profile relatively differently when you look at their individual careers, but that's what the rough table is off the top of its head. Those are the buckets, the too long didn't read buckets. Now I used to, or last year, I was breaking this down by 10% slot rate increments. Basically, you just get an idea of the spectrum of where players are landing to get an idea of where to put my buckets, essentially. Someone in the Discord asked me to break this down a little more consistently, or to do that again this year. And they actually included filters so we could only look at players with certain receiving yards per team pass attempt or certain yards per route run. So breaking it down from 5% slot rate to 100% slot rate, both with an ADOT under 13 and an ADOT over 13 on two different sides, I break down where this class fits and who follows them or who they are following into the NFL. There are a lot of things that stand out to me when we look at this slightly more in-depth table. For one thing, Marvin Harrison is as likely to hit as Malik Nabers. Honestly, when you look at the percentage hit rates from those groups, once drafted with significant draft capital, the idea that Marvin Harrison Jr. is less likely to hit doesn't really follow through from the hit rate table. The 4% difference in rate, if Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers both get the draft capital we expect, then they're both probably as likely to hit, looking at a clean, unbiased perspective. But I would say, there's following my whole process down to the end and trying to re-examine some of my own considerations. For example, when I'm questioned about Marvin Harrison Jr. as a wide receiver one versus Malik Nabers, I'm often referring to the fact that Malik Nabers has a higher ceiling or higher consistent ceiling if he hits. I don't think that's true. I think that's just a thing I said because it fits and what I would like it to be the answer. But honestly, when you look at Malik Nabers' group, as it were, between 50 and 60% slot rate with an ADOT below 13, the real question with Malik Nabers is there's too many players in that group with that higher slot rate, like Sterling Shepard and Jordy Nelson. Players like CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Ayuk, Michael Pittman, even Deebo Samuel and DJ Moore were all running much lower slot percentages. They were somewhere between 10 and 20%. That's a significant difference compared to the Malik Nabers tier. Malik Nabers, however, also more correctly or more closely resembles Jordan Addison from last year, or Amon-Ra St. Brown, to show that higher ceiling still within that group, because they were running between 60 and 70% slot rates with ADOTs under 13 for their career length. That's also where Justin Jefferson fits in. So I don't think this table limits the ultimate ceiling of Malik Nabers, because Amon-Ra St. Brown and Justin Jefferson were both running incredibly high slot rates with lower ADOTs, relatively lower ADOTs compared to most competitors. And when you look at Marvin Harrison's group, yeah, you see Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and Marcus Brown, but very few Jamar Chases, because there are very few Jamar Chases. In other words, Puka Nacua is right next door, running a slightly higher slot rate between 20 and 30%. He's also fairly and much more of an outlier to my process in terms of he didn't consistently hit the yards per route run or the receiving yards per team pass attempt more succinctly threshold. So I'm not sure that justifies a higher ceiling for the Marvin Harrison outcome. I think there might be a higher NFL outcome or a higher psychological hit, because when Jamar Chase is hit, those high ADOT, low slot players, or Romo Dunze, who fits that category more consistently this year as well, because he was running between 20 and 30% slot rate with an ADOT over 13 for his career length, I think there's a psychological bump towards players running outside the numbers, hitting, especially early in their career. They get more of a bump than a Justin Jefferson or an Amon-Ra St. Brown. But not all of that is clean, because it's psychology and sometimes people react differently. I do think if Romo Dunze or Marvin Harrison hit, even if Malik Nabers hit at a relatively similar rate, there would be a larger increase in value for both of those players than Malik Nabers. And I honestly don't think the outcome, relatively for fantasy, in terms of points per game outcome, a number of seasons hitting that kind of points per game outcome, is actually lower for Malik Nabers at all than Marvin Harrison Jr. Both were doing consistently well at a high enough level in their groups to consider both to have the ultimate upside in each of their groups, if you like. So why ultimately do I have Marvin Harrison Jr. higher? Partly it's believing that psychological edge. It's taking into account other people's analysis, because Marvin Harrison Jr. has been consistently rated the wide receiver one for this class back to his infantry elementary school days, I'm pretty sure. And it's also because he scores higher in my model. Players that score 19 or above in my pre-draft model, especially if drafted in round one, are straight up hits apart from Corey Davis. Like, it's a very good group. Now, that's not saying everything, but if I'm going to have a model, while I do actively go against it for some of my ranks. When both are doing well and there's really no questions on their overall profile, it makes no sense for me to put Malik Nabers above Marvin Harrison Jr. outside of this consideration of ceiling and the fact that psychologically I think people are going to prefer Marvin Harrison Jr. and prefer him if they both hit. But honestly, they're both tier one prospects relative to their hit rate group, and I don't think their ceilings are any lower for one or the other. I don't think they're any less likely to hit it. So Malik Nabers, with a slightly higher hit rate in his particular career length slot rate and ADOT group, should rightfully be the wide receiver one in my overall process outside of these ancillary concerns. Especially when you get down to someone like Roma Dunze and Xavier Worthy. Both Worthy and Roma Dunze were running higher slot rates with relatively higher ADOTs. In other words, Roma Dunze was running between 20 and 30% slot rate for his career total with an ADOT over 13, and Worthy is running 30 to 40% slot rate with an ADOT over 13, which is my concern on Odunze, is that it's that smaller bucket where they hit at a relatively high rate in that bucket, but only 12% of them have been drafted in the first three rounds in the NFL draft. The two actually offer really interesting comparisons in that both had 2 years with an ADOT over 13. Roma Dunze spent his final 2 years out of four running an ADOT of 13.8 and 15.5. In those 2 years, he had receiving yards per team pass attempt of 1.9, below average but still good, and 2.85, above average and very good in his final season. Xavier Worthy, on the other hand, spent his first 2 years running an ADOT over 13. His first year, 13.4, and his second year, 17.6. And his receiving yards per team pass attempt relative to those 2 years, 2.89 in that 13 ADOT year, which is very good for his age 18 season, or any season for that matter, pretty much equaling Roma Dunze's final season when he had a 15 ADOT and ran a 2.85, so slightly more air under the ball, yet still relatively the same receiving yards per team pass attempt, or relatively similar occupation of the team's overall receiving production. And in his second year, with a 17 ADOT, he ran a 1.87. That year interested me because the minute Xavier Worthy's ADOT jumped up that high to 17.6, he started to perform below average. So he struggled the higher his ADOT got. It's 1.87 at age 19 isn't good, but it's not terrible. It's within the boundaries, if you know what I mean. So much like Roma Dunze's second to last year, where he ran a 1.9 with an ADOT over 13, slightly below average, but it's okay. You can come up with more comparisons just across these 4 and 3 year samples as well with Roma Dunze and Xavier Worthy. For example, both hit a highlight of 2.8 receiving yards per team pass attempt. Xavier Worthy did it with an ADOT just over 13. Roma Dunze did it with an ADOT over 15 in his final season. So in each of their years where they ran an ADOT under 10 or under 11, actually, they both, Roma Dunze ran a 10.2 at age 19 and he got one receiving yards per team pass attempt. And in Xavier Worthy's season under 11 as an ADOT or a 10.3 ADOT, he ran a 2.13. So actually did much better in the slot, but also struggled on the out when he was at a higher ADOT, whereas Xavier Worthy's are the exact opposite. In a similar way, if you like yards per route run more than receiving yards per team pass attempt, Roma Dunze is just going to profile better because he has a slightly higher yards per route run. Whereas if you prefer receiving yards per team pass attempt, Xavier Worthy has a slightly higher receiving yards per team pass attempt. Both do good and are above the average in both statistics. So it almost comes down to choice, or the fact that Xavier Worthy was more successful at a lower ADOT, whereas Roma Dunze was more successful at a higher ADOT. So even if they both profile, and they do, as higher ADOT players for their career total, those who prefer higher ADOT players are probably going to prefer Roma Dunze, because when he was running a higher ADOT, he had more success. Whereas those who prefer higher relatively high co-opting of the team's overall receiving yards per team pass attempt, or a higher percentage or version of the team's receiving yards, volume in other words, are going to prefer Xavier Worthy, which is where those two stats revolve around each other, where they mirror each other. Yards per route run is going to highlight performance on opportunity or routes, whereas receiving yards per team pass attempt is going to highlight relatively high volume despite how often that team was passing. So even if the team wasn't passing very much, but you were a significantly large percentage of that passing game, your numbers are going to be better. So one prioritizes the volume relative to the team offense, and one prioritizes performance on opportunities. And that kind of typifies the difference between the two. Now again, both are higher ADOT players, so non-mirror Malik Nabers. In this year's class with a lower ADOT for their career total, Taj Washington, who I profiled last week, actually comes into that category a little bit better. For his career total, he ran between 40 and 50% slot rate with an ADOT under 13. But when we dug into him, we found out that that career is basically bifurcated between a high ADOT and a low ADOT, and a low slot and a high slot. And he performed better as a high slot player. So while he's fitting into the Malik Nabers category, it's only with a little extra context that you can see he actually well deserves to be in the Malik Nabers category. And Taj Washington doesn't have this expectation of draft capital near close to what Malik Nabers should have. But in terms of hitting in the NFL, if he has a top 3-round draft pick spent on him, I think his ceiling is probably one of the more muted ones, because he's not Malik Nabers and he doesn't hit the highs in yards per route run or receiving yards per team pass attempt. But he's definitely in that bucket of more likely to have success because he was running on average a lower ADOT, and his most successful years are lower ADOT, higher slot years. So if the NFL is interested, he's more likely to have some level of fantasy success than Romo Dunze or Xavier Worthy, but both of whom are actually more likely to get NFL attention. For one reason or another, their conference or their combine time, in the case of Xavier Worthy, and they're more likely to have higher ceilings in this lower hit rate group because both consistently show variability but success in their different roles. But then again, isn't Worthy more closely profiled to a Taj Washington because he had more success at higher slot years, whereas Romo Dunze is more likely to be a Marvin Harrison Jr. type prospect because he had more success at higher ADOT roles. And you can go back and forth as much as you like. The percentages don't really give us a significant edge to expecting one to have a higher ceiling than the other. Simple fact is that Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers both look significantly likely to succeed in the NFL, as significant as anyone can, and both did as well at their respective roles in college as each other. And the ceilings for their roles going into the NFL easily have similar outcomes. Malik Nabers has got Amon-Ra St. Brown and CeeDee Lamb. Malik Nabers has got Amon-Ra St. Brown and Justin Jefferson on his end of the spectrum, and Marvin Harrison has DK Metcalf and Ja'Marr Chase on his end of the spectrum. I think the ceiling is relatively similar, and I think the edge, if there is one, does probably go to Nabers, because players drafted with a lower ADOT in general have consistently had more likely success in the NFL when draft capital is spent on them. And those percentages are relatively stable when you go from just the first 3 rounds to just looking at round 1. But the samples drop so significantly, obviously once again, the hit rates and the samples themselves of the buckets are less dependable even than 30 to 40 player samples in this top 3-round draft capital. But that they're consistent seems to mean that it's highlighting, for me, something that is worthy of viewing players through as a lens in terms of what type of player they were in college and who to compare them to when going to the NFL. So if you missed it, because I just kind of threw it at you there, I honestly think Malik Nabers, following my process down to the bitter end, should be the wide receiver one in this class. And it's really just because of my model score and taking into account the likely psychological ramifications of Marvin Harrison Jr. hitting versus Malik Nabers that really push him to 2, even though it's in the same tier. In other words, when I'm on the clock, if I have the choice between Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers, I think I should take Malik Nabers, but I also think I'm just as good taking Marvin Harrison Jr., and I honestly don't want to make the decision. Like, I'm hoping the decision gets made for me, which is never a comfortable situation to be in when it comes to a rookie draft when you're wanting to take as much risk as you're willing to take in fantasy. But I honestly don't have a clear decision maker. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, similar ceilings, entirely different roles in college and likely entirely different roles in the NFL, but both have the same ceiling. Malik Nabers just gets the edge because players running an ADOT under 13 hit a little bit more consistently. And those are the two biggest sample groups we have. 32 players for the Marvin Harrison Jr. group hit at a 40% rate, 26% of draft picks have 26% of players in that group have been drafted in the first three rounds. 35% of the Malik Nabers group have been drafted in the first three rounds, although he does tend towards the high end of that slot rate, and 48% of them hit. So it's 40% versus 48. And even if we push Malik Nabers up into that less often drafted capital category, which I think is less likely with Malik Nabers because he's going to get a top three round pick, that's still 44% hit rate in that category. So it still ekes out that higher ADOT group of Marvin Harrison Jr. The other thing I wanted to do is show how this table can simply, and probably unfairly, but relatively successfully, I think, cut down a class down into the most likely or the most important to profile or gain an opinion of from a draft class. Now, the average receiving yards per team pass attempt career total of players that go on to have success, relatively high success, like a top 12 season in the NFL, is 2.1. And the average yards per route run is around 2.7. So if you apply those two filters to this table, first looking at like a 2.6 yards per route run, it cuts this entire class, which is a relatively large draft class in 2024, down to three players across that 2.6 career total yards per route run threshold. Marvin Harrison with a high ADOT, Troy Franklin, and Malik Nabers with a low ADOT. Probably means Troy Franklin needs more profiling, considering he's not someone that I think most people would consider to be as likely. Now, that's just looking at the yards per outrun bucket. When we go down to like a 2 receiving yards per team pass attempt, it shrinks this class down to 4 players. Xavier Worthy, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Jacob Cowan. Now, Jacob Cowan is the only other guy running a low slot or a low ADOT, an ADOT under 13, who's crossing that 2 receiving yards per team pass attempt average. And he has a much higher slot rate, running between 70 and 80%, compared to Malik Nabers running 50 to 60%. But in his group is also Jalen Waddle, Drake London, Jerry Jeudy, Zay Jones, Cooper Kupp, Curtis Samuel, Stephon Diggs. There are a lot of very high and very low hits in there. Now, Jacob Cowan is less of a Malik Nabers looking at their profiles proper, so you're probably more expecting a Curtis Samuel level impact, maybe in the NFL versus a Malik Nabers, but it still means he's a relatively interesting name to consider. Xavier Worthy is the other name that shows up. And again, Worthy and Adunze is really a litmus test whether you prefer yards per out run or receiving yards per team pass attempt, as far as I can tell. But that limits our entire interesting group of players down to 3 players on the one side with yards per route run and 4 players on the other. And 2 are crossovers, which means 5 players, including Romo Dunze, are actually relatively interesting in this year's class. Sorry, Troy Franklin was the other guy who crossed it, not Romo Dunze, because Romo Dunze's career total yards per route run is actually slightly below the 2.6 threshold I put in here. He's at 2.5. All right, that's fine. 7 players in this class. Troy Franklin, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr., Zay Worthy, Jacob Cowing, and Romo Dunze, because 2.5 is just fine. And I think that's a really interesting way of limiting a class down to its core group. I think they're the most important players to get a decent opinion on before moving into the context of players that played a lower amount of volume, whether it's seasons or total games, like a Dontez Walker, because he actually crosses the 2.5 yards per route run category as well, like Romo Dunze does, but had a limited college sample. Again, view my ranks, view my notes to get more in-depth analysis, but I think viewing players through this lens is a really interesting way of simplifying a class in terms of how often they hit, how often they get draft capital, and who are the most interesting players before digging into the depth. Again, if you want to see this table, or instead of making it with my data, you can check out Discord that you can find through my Patreon, or I'll probably post it on Patreon later this week. And it does offer some interesting comparisons. And again, before film watchers watch it, because this is the type of thing that would drive Zach Reed crazy, I'm sure, they're not meant to be direct comparisons. They're not comps. Because, again, the buckets are going to be limiting. When you look at someone like Taj Washington last week and realizing he wasn't running the same role all of his career, and we're relying on a history since 2015 to smooth over some of those edges, there are going to be some players who honestly don't play in the same role year over year, entering the same category. But that's why we take in further context, and that's also why we do listen to Zach Reed and other tape profiles to get better understanding of who plays where and how successful they were at doing it. I think it's interesting. Feel free to check it out. Malik Nabers, he should probably be the wide receiver one in this class, but he's not going to be for most people. And on the clock, I'm not honestly sure which way I would go. I think I should take Malik Nabers, but I'm not going to be scared to take Marvin Harrison Jr. either. And I think Rama Dunze and Xavier Worthy really offer a litmus test to what you prefer in a prospect coming from college this year. Outside of draft capital, I think their profiles offer interesting comparison points in terms of one being a receiving yards per team pass attempt boy and the other being a yards per route run guy. Anyway, that's it for me this week. Every minute of this podcast has made me a little late getting to bed so I can get to work on time. I want you to know that because it's going to hurt. Really appreciate it. Please offer more ideas of what you'd like podcasts on, because I'm struggling to find the time to record them, let alone brainstorm different subjects to actually go into in a little bit more depth. Feel like I've covered everything, but that doesn't make for good consistent content, so let me know what questions you have. Really appreciate it. Hope to see you on the Dynasty Grind on Wednesdays, and good luck in your rookie draft this year, as always. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the players, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, get got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road. Go, clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.